The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. On Monday, September 23rd, the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs held an intersessional meeting in Vienna, Austria. They discussed recommendations made by the World Health Organization's Expert Committee on Drug Dependence on the rescheduling of cannabis and cannabis products. We're going to hear audio from that meeting later in the show. First, on Tuesday, September 24th, the Economic and Consumer Policy Subcommittee of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform held a hearing on e-cigarettes and the outbreak of lung disease that's believed to be associated with vaping. The hearing was entitled, Don't Vape, Examining the Outbreak of Lung Disease and CDC's Urgent Warning Not to Use E-Cigarettes. We're going to hear opening statements from the subcommittee chair and ranking member. First voice will be Representative Raja Krishnamurthy, Democrat from Illinois. He's followed by Representative Michael Cloud, Republican from Texas.
We are here to amplify the recent health warnings issued by the Centers for Disease Control related to 530 e-cigarette-related incidents of lung disease in 38 states and the U.S. Virgin Islands. First, I want to make clear that we did not plan to have this emergency hearing at the beginning of this Congress, let alone this time last month. But on August 23rd, officials from my home state of Illinois reported the first death due to a mysterious vaping-related lung illness. And since then, a total of 8 individuals have tragically died in this outbreak. In response to this crisis, CDC is warning the American public to consider not using e-cigarettes of any kind. Because this subcommittee has investigated the youth vaping epidemic and the companies behind it, we feel that it is our duty to draw attention to recent government health warnings about the dangers of e-cigarette use. The long-term health effects of continued vaping is unknown, but what we do know should give us all pause. State health departments continue to conduct retroactive analyses of patient records to better understand exactly when this outbreak began. As they do, the number of affected people will grow. Unfortunately, illness related to e-cigarettes is not new. The FDA has received 127 reports of seizures and other neurological conditions caused by e-cigarettes. When a product is released onto the market without safety testing or clinical trials, this is what we fear. This is a problem exacerbated by e-cigarette companies that make what appear to be unfounded and illegal claims that their products are safer and healthier than combustible cigarettes. People trust and rely on those claims, even when there is no evidence to back them up. That is why this subcommittee wrote a detailed letter to the FDA outlining our findings about Juul illegally marketing its product as safe, healthy, and a smoking cessation device. FDA agreed with us, and days after our letter responded with its own letter to Juul declaring that Juul had broken the law. Juul's response is due next week on September 30th. After that, the FDA will have the opportunity to act. I encourage all of you to follow that development closely. We certainly will. And just days after the FDA responded to our letter, the administration, in part citing our investigation, announced that it would move to ban all e-cigarette flavors, including mint and menthol. The fact that flavors hook kids is a point this subcommittee hammered home over our 2 days of hearings in July. The administration cited our hearings in rolling out its proposal. We should all be encouraged that Democrats and Republicans are coming together when the health of our nation's youth comes under attack. Today, as we focus on the tragic outcomes of this lung disease outbreak, we must view it as another chance to come together to protect public health. At the heart of the recent vaping-related outbreak are families being blindsided. With us today is Ruby Johnson, a mother of 7 from near Chicago. This August, as she prepared to drop her oldest daughter off to start college, already a stressful time, the Johnson family faced a terrifying health scare. Instead of moving into a dorm room, her daughter moved into a hospital bed far from home, where she stayed for what would have been her first week of classes. Ruby's daughter could have died. Thankfully, she recovered enough from her bout of lung disease to be released, but she still has trouble breathing, and doctors cannot tell her how much longer that may last. Mrs. Johnson, thank you for coming to share your family's harrowing experience. We are also joined by leaders from the public health community to provide a neutral assessment of the outbreak and provide their advice to the public they serve. We have Dr. Ann Shuket from the CDC, Dr. Ngozi Ezike of the Illinois Department of Public Health, and Dr. Albert Rizzo of the American Lung Association. Thank you all for joining us today. We look forward to learning more about how we can avoid more preventable deaths.
Over the last several weeks, it's been clear that users of certain vaping products have become very ill, some tragically and to the point of death. Mr. Chairman, I do greatly appreciate your desire to utilize this committee's authority to get to the bottom of what's causing these mysterious illnesses. In the Center for Disease Control's Prevention September 19 update, the number of those sick reached 530 and 8 deaths have been confirmed. This is very concerning, and it is clear that we need to examine the cause and what can be done to prevent it. To the best information available, many of these cases seem linked to the use of products that present themselves to be something they are not. Based on the limited data available about those impacted by this mysterious lung illness, approximately 16% are under 18 years of age. And while each life is affected is important, these recent incidents also serve to further bring attention to what has become an epidemic increase in teen vaping, with currently 20% of high school students vaping. Add to that the decades-long epidemic of addiction to traditional tobacco smoking that will leave 5 people dead by the end of these opening statements. As a father of 3, this is very concerning. I wish we had a quick fix to ensure that each child is protected, that no American finds themselves bound by a substance, and that all of us are able to find complete personal fulfillment in experiencing the purpose for which we were created. Today, we're here to discuss what should be the appropriate response to the lung illnesses associated with certain vaping products. Complicating this discussion is a lack of scientific data and studies available, counterfeit products, untraceable supply lines, a lack of enforcement that allows players to pass the buck of accountability. For example, data available leads us to believe that many of the recently reported 530 cases involve vaping cannabinoid products. I hope today we're able to do the good work for which this investigative committee exists. I believe there's a lot of bipartisan support for addressing this situation. I appreciate the chairman's heart in this and to the point of examining this to find the solution and our desire to end teen vaping. There is unity. Please know my heart goes out to those impacted, and my condolences to those who've lost loved ones. Again, I appreciate the chairman's work on this issue and look forward to productive discussion today.
You just heard Representative Michael Cloud, Republican from Texas, ranking member of the Economic and Consumer Policy Subcommittee of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. He was preceded by Representative Raja Krishnamurthy, Democrat from Illinois, the chair of that subcommittee. They were giving their opening statements before a hearing on Tuesday, September 24th. The hearing was entitled, quote, "Don't Vape, Examining the Outbreak of Lung Disease and CDC's Warning Not to Use E-Cigarettes," end quote. Now let's hear from their first witness. Ann Shuket, MD, is Principal Deputy Director at the Federal Centers for Disease Control.
I want to make 4 key points. First, as soon as we learned about the initial cases of lung injury, CDC has been working 24/7, hand-in-hand with the FDA and our state and local public health partners to find the cause. Secondly, our ability to do this type of investigation relies on a critical underlying public health infrastructure, including data systems that need modernization and a trained public health workforce. Third, the CDC has made important recommendations to the public, including the following. While this investigation is ongoing, people who are concerned about lung disease associated with e-cigarette use or vaping should consider refraining from using e-cigarette products or vaping. People should not buy these products off the street and should not modify them further. adults who use e-cigarettes or vaping products because they have quit cigarette smoking should not return to smoking cigarettes. We have a need to address the epidemic of youth use of e-cigarettes, and this current outbreak reinforces the need to address the broader youth e-cigarette epidemic. So what do we know so far? As you've heard, several hundred cases have been reported from nearly all states. We've had a number of deaths. The cases are occurring in young people. One half of all cases are less than 25 years old. People present with cough, shortness of breath, chest pain, and sometimes with symptoms like nausea and vomiting, fatigue, or fever. Most of the cases with information so far have reported use of either THC or THC and nicotine-containing products. Some have reported nicotine only. There may be some challenges with the histories of exposure in some subset of the patients. Well, what do we not know so far? Probably the most important thing, we don't know the cause. No single product, brand, substance, or additive has been linked to all cases. This investigation is ongoing and it's very dynamic. What are we doing to respond? CDC is working closely with state and local public health, with the FDA and clinical community to get to the bottom of this. We've deployed staff through what we call EpiAIDS assistance to help states with their investigations. We've provided technical assistance, developed a case definition, standardized clinical guidance, and a reporting system, and are working every day on coordinating the parts of the investigation and response. We set up an incident management system and activated our emergency operations center, as we do in other public health urgent situations. And we've convened the public health, clinical, and media numerous times to share what we know and don't know and how they can be part of the solution. One such example is a clinical outreach and communication activity call that we held in the past few days that had 2,500 lines active in clinicians around the country listening to the latest information. We're working very closely with the FDA on the laboratory aspects of trying to trace back and study the products from affected patients. There are challenges with this response, including the nature of the outbreak itself. Many states, some of the cases report using illicit products and may not be fully forthcoming. The marketplace for e-cigarettes is wide and diverse with a multitude of products, and it may be very complicated to tease out the problematic exposures. And our public health data collection systems are in need of an upgrade. In terms of youth e-cigarette use, we are seeing an epidemic, and in the questions, I'd be happy to go into many more details about that, but our most recent data for 2019 is continuing to be concerning. I'll just leave you with this. CDC is dedicated to working around the clock together with FDA and the state and local health officials to identify the cause or causes of the outbreak, and we'll continue to update you during the course of the investigation.
That was Dr. Ann Schuchat, Principal Deputy Director at the Federal Centers for Disease Control. She was testifying before the Economic and Consumer Policy Subcommittee of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform on Tuesday, September 24th, at a hearing entitled Don't Vape, Examining the Outbreak of Lung Disease and CDC's Urgent Warning Not to Use E-Cigarettes. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. Turning from domestic to international news, the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs held an intersessional meeting on Monday, September 23rd in Vienna, Austria. At this meeting, they discussed recommendations by the World Health Organization's Expert Committee on Drug Dependence to reschedule cannabis and cannabis products. Dr. Gilles Forti works for the World Health Organization in Geneva as the coordinator of policy, access, and use in WHO's Essential Medicines and Health Products Department.
So the recommendations seek the recommendation for whether or not a substance should be scheduled. They seek to prevent harms caused by the use of psychoactive substances that are being reviewed. So there is in those recommendations, there is an important concern of preventing harm to health. And also, this recommendation also aim at looking at if whether or not those substances should be made available because they have a unique impact on health. So one of the major objectives of those recommendations is to make sure that they will protect health from those psychoactive substances, but also this recommendation will mean to ensure that those psychoactive substances that are reviewed and that have therapeutic use are not presented for being accessible to whom need them. So those recommendations, as we said before, are based on science, and therefore it is the responsibility of the WHO Secretariat and of the Expert Committee on Drug Dependence to take into account the most updated information available on those substances with respect to harm, but also with respect to therapeutic use. I would like to mention here that the level of international control that are recommended by WHO ECDD should be considered as a minimum requirement. It is at the discretion of the member states to implement, if they like, more stringent levels of control, depending on the specific country context. I think this is a very important point to understand. Whatever ECDD recommends in terms of scheduling, it is should be considered as a minimum requirement. It is up to the member states to decide if they want a regulation that is more stringent or not. With respect to the review of cannabis and cannabis components, what has been the rationale for this review? Why is WHO embarked on this review? First of all, to comply with a mandate that was given by the CND through the resolution 52/5 and the resolution 50/2 that requested WHO to update report on cannabis and reviewed dronabinol when additional information became available. So this process didn't happen overnight. We have, in the last few years, carried out report and update to the ECDD. Since 2014, every year, a report by the WHO Secretariat to the ECDD was carried out on cannabis. So the review of cannabis and cannabis component was not sudden. It has been a process that started when those resolutions were issued, but more actively since 2014, when information was becoming more and more available with respect to harms and also with respect to therapeutic use. And therefore, very recently, because of this increase of information that was available, again, on harm and also on therapeutic use, the WHO ECDD considered that the amount of new evidence be sufficient for a formal review of cannabis. In addition to that, what led also WHO to embark on this review was the request from a number of countries to for WHO to engage in a more comprehensive collection and carry out an independent analysis, I insist on the word independent analysis, of scientific evidence on harms and therapeutic use for the review by the ECDD. And this is why, because, and as you know, a number of your countries are embarking in, for example, promoting medical use of cannabis or are willing to regulate in a more coherent way or relevant way, if you will, cannabis use in countries. So a number of member states to which we are accountable as WHO Secretariat has requested us to carry out this scientific review of cannabis, be it for the therapeutic use of cannabis, but also for the harms that were generated by cannabis. And finally, since the establishment of the Convention of 1961, cannabis has never been subject to a formal review by the WHO Expert Committee on Drug Dependence. So therefore, it was important that at some stage there was a formal review that would be carried out. So if we move now to the recommendation from the Expert Committee on Drug Dependence, which are recommendations for scheduling of cannabis. So the first one was related to cannabis and cannabis resin, including the preparation of cannabis. So the current scheduling status is that cannabis and cannabis resin is in Schedule 1 of the 1961 Convention and in Schedule 4 of the 1961 Convention. So the recommendation from the Expert Committee on Drug Dependence was to delete cannabis and cannabis resin from Schedule 4 of the 1961 Convention, while maintaining the strict control of Schedule 1 of the 1961 Convention. So the recommendation was not to deschedule cannabis, but to maintain cannabis under the Schedule 1 only of the 1961 Convention. And the rationale for change in scheduling was that cannabis is less harmful and not similar to other Schedule 4 substances. And for this, the principle of similarity has been used according to the conventions. Number two, that there is a proven medical use of cannabis preparations, and a number of them have been approved in a number of countries. Recommendation number two on dronabinol. So the current scheduling status is for dronabinol to be under Schedule 2 of the 1971 Convention. The recommendation from the committee was to add dronabinol or Delta-9-THC to Schedule 1 of the 1961 Convention, and at the same time delete it from the 1971 Convention. The rationale for change was for Delta-9-THC, which is the main active component of cannabis, to have a review of Delta-9-THC, because at the time of the writing of the 1961 Convention, it was not known that Delta-9-THC was the active principle of cannabis. Number two, and more importantly, the objective was to place dronabinol in the same convention and schedule as cannabis because of the similarity concept. Similarity between dronabinol and cannabis in terms of liability to abuse and in terms of producing ill effect to cannabis and cannabis preparations. And bringing together the plants and the active principle was also, for cannabis, was also in a way aligning with what's going on with opium and coca leaf, where morphine and opium are in the same schedule and same convention, and coca leaf and cocaine are in the same convention and same schedule. The third recommendation was about isomers of THC, which are currently in Schedule 1 of the 1971 Convention, and the recommendation was to add them to Schedule 1 of the 61 and to delete them from the 71 Convention. The rationale for change was that the isomer of THC are substances not easily differentiated from Delta-9-THC with normal chemical analysis, and placing them in the same convention and schedule as Delta-9-THC will facilitate international control of Delta-9-THC. Number four, extract and tinctures of cannabis. The current scheduling status is to be in Schedule 1 of the 1961 Convention, and the recommendation was to delete from Schedule 1 the entry on extract and tincture. The rationale for the change was that extract and tincture was originally included because the active cannabis component was not known, and also because it was felt that this entry was not necessary, as extract and tincture are also controlled as preparation of cannabis, covered under the 1961 Convention. And by deleting them from the 1961 Convention, it would allow also greater certainty of control of illicit substances, in particular high-purity illicit THC product that are neither tincture nor extract. So basically, they are harmful preparation of cannabis that are produced by other method that by extraction and by using solvent for tinctures, that in this new context will be controlled, because at the moment they were not controlled because they were neither extract nor tinctures. Number four, recommendation number four on cannabidiol preparations. So the current scheduling status, synthetic cannabidiol is currently not controlled. Meanwhile, cannabidiol as a cannabis preparation is controlled under Schedule 1 and Schedule 4 of the 1961 Convention. So the recommendation is from the committee is that a footnote be added to Schedule 1 of the 1961 Convention to read, preparations containing predominantly cannabidiol and not more than 0.2% of Delta-9 THC are not under international control. The rationale for that change is to ensure access to cannabidiol medicines, in particular the one that are used to treat childhood epilepsy. Number two, because cannabidiol is not a psychoactive substance and there is no evidence of dependence or abuse. And cannabidiol is not similar to currently controlled substances. Therefore, cannabidiol does not satisfy the criteria for international control. However, trace amounts of Delta-9 THC can be detected in cannabis-based pharmaceutical preparations. So this change and the proposal of footnote will ensure that preparations of cannabidiol with no more than 0.2% of Delta-9 THC are not controlled. And finally, the recommendation number 6 concerns pharmaceutical preparation containing dronabinol. Current scheduling of those preparations is Schedule 2 of the 1971 Convention as dronabinol preparations, because dronabinol is currently under Schedule 2, but also they can be scheduled under Schedule 1 and 4 of the 96 Convention as preparation of cannabis. So the recommendation of the committee was to add those preparations of dronabinol to Schedule 3 of the 1961 Convention on Narcotic Drugs. So basically, this preparation will be subject to a lower level of control, but still be controlled. So the rationale for the change would be that pharmaceutical preparation of Delta-9 THC taken orally are not liable to abuse. So therefore, the lower level of control is proposed for those preparations, preparations which include Delta-9 THC that cannot be recovered. So this lower level of control will increase international access to pharmaceutical preparation of dronabinol while protecting them from harm.
That was Gillis Forte, MD, with the World Health Organization. He was speaking at an intersessional meeting of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs, which was held on Monday, September 23rd in Vienna, Austria. Delegates were considering recommendations by the WHO's Expert Committee on Drug Dependence to reschedule cannabis and cannabis products. They were only engaged in discussion. The CND is not yet ready to vote on these recommendations. That may happen before the big annual meeting in March, or it could happen at that meeting, or it could be delayed even further. Who can say? Whatever happens, you'll hear about it in a future edition of this show. For now, that's all the time we have. Thank you for listening. This has been Century of Lies, and I have been your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network, on the web at DrugTruth.net. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.